Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this evening's teleseminar called How to Create a New Mind. My name is Damien Sen, and it's a great pleasure to have you on the call this evening. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, Kath Duncan. But before I introduce Kath, please allow me to share how this call will work this evening, particularly if this is your first peopleyoushouldmeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking Kath a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted via the site prior to the call from you, our listeners. Now, the whole area of creating a new mind and adapting to change is an area of fascination for me, and I think particularly pertinent given the levels of change that we're currently experiencing in the world. Now, I guess the levels of change are totally unprecedented, and they're actually growing at an exponential rate. And I know for me personally, even though I work in the whole world of change and transformation, and also blending in that with IT as well, there are times when I personally feel quite challenged and overwhelmed by all the incredible things that are unfolding in the world. And I know many of our callers actually experience the same challenge. To help guide us through this new terrain of life, we've got an expert, Kath Duncan, who's really going to help us be able to navigate that terrain with confidence and success. Now, Kath has a broad range of experience in the transformational world. She has worked for a number of years in the counselling professions and also as a coach. She's a qualified Martha Beck coach and also a master practitioner of NLP, and also is just about to launch a whole new and exciting teleseminar coaching programs as a facilitator as well, which I'm very keen to find out more about this evening. So I'm very, very excited about this call, and I'm very excited to welcome our special guest, Kath Duncan. Are you there, Kath?
Hi, Damien. Thank you. I'm very excited to be here and chatting with you this evening about some of the stuff that, as you say, it's incredibly challenging, and yes, I myself feel incredibly challenged by it as well. You know, the pace of life and the high change that we're dealing with, and it's something that I've become very passionate about, the idea of finding a space in myself and helping other people to find that space where they can develop a calmness and a solid place to kind of move and respond from with all the chaos around us.
Yeah. I think it's very interesting because for me personally, it's both a challenging time but also probably one of the most exciting times as well. So even though there is high levels of change, look, with any, there is the scary aspects of change, but there's also the very exciting aspect of change as well. And yeah, I would be keen to sort of explore the possibilities this evening on both sides of this spectrum. So I'm really, really looking forward to getting stuck into it.
There's a fantastic book by, and also his name is Richard Dawson, and it's called The Future Files. And the distinction that he makes is he's talking about what might happen in the next 50 years in the world based on the trends of the last 20 to 50 years. And he's saying that he's making the distinction that he thinks the world is going to become an increasingly polarized place with people who are able to keep up with the technology. And you know, it is mostly about technological advancements that are changing the world and making it so much more global and faster. And you know, there are going to be people who can keep up with that, and there are going to be people who will struggle to keep up with that, or who may even consciously choose, you know, that they don't want to go down that path. Mm. And you know, I think one of the distinctions that I'd make there, slightly different, is to say that all these changes are triggers for stress and fear, and I think it's going to be about, you know, some people are up for those changes and are ready with a set of resources and kind of life skills, I guess you could call them, for dealing with the high pace of life and the change and the, a lot of the factors that we can't control. You know, globalization is meaning that we're much more interconnected and there are more factors being introduced into our lives on a daily basis that we actually don't have control over. You know, so it's about those can be obstacles and big challenges, or there can be, as you say, major opportunities. And I think it's the people who develop the right kind of life skills and what I call agile living strategies who are going to be able to deal with those obstacles and challenges and you know, still enjoy life in spite of some of those obstacles and leverage the opportunities, you know, things like being able to be, really, we're more able now than ever before to kind of customize our work and life, you know, break the rules and decide how we want to do things. So, it's going to be about whether you've got the skills to be up for it.
Great. So I guess probably just kicking us off at the top to really get into like a definition, I guess, of what it actually means to create a new mind. Just wondering if you could actually elaborate a little bit more on that, Kath.
Sure. You know, I think we think of some aspects of ourselves as being unchangeable or kind of predetermined by genetics, and we say things like, I'm just a shy person, or I'm just not like that, that's not in me. Or, and we even got sayings like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. it reflects the societal belief that at some age, you know, I think there's a sense of what age that is, we're not really teachable anymore. We start to settle down and, you know, and kind of stabilize and pan out a bit. And, you know, actually, even, you know, psychologists until fairly recently have thought that once we get to adulthood, our brains are basically, you know, fully formed, and that we can't create new neural pathways, that it's more a case of strengthening pre-existing ones, so that it's all about what you learn in childhood. But more recent research is showing that this isn't actually true, that the brain is actually very plastic, very agile is what I want to say. And we can give ourselves experiences that create new ways of thinking and, you know, literally change the structure of the brain. Under MRI scans, the brain looks different. For me, it's the quality of our thinking is what creates the quality of our results. And because our environment is so changeable and becoming, you know, even more so all the time, one of the most important things that I think we can do is develop our ability to change our own minds, and to be able to create new and more useful ways of thinking if the old ways are not serving us. On my website, I've got a quote by Charles Darwin, because I just think it's such a fantastic quote that sums up agile living strategies. And he says, it's not the strongest that survive, nor the most intelligent. And I think our society has this tendency to think that it is the most intelligent. So, you know, what marks you get at school and so on matters. But he says, it's not the strongest that survive, not the most intelligent species that survive. It's the species that are most responsive to change that survive. And, you know, I think that's kind of where we're at now, that the people who are most able to change and create a new mind, as situations demand, those are people who are going to survive and thrive in this particular era. And I call it having an agile mind because for me, you know, when you look at what the meaning of agile is, it's about being able to adapt easily, but it also has connotations around movement, like a dance. So, you know, it's about being graceful and elegant. So for me, saying, you know, having the ability to develop an agile mind, that's about having the ability to change in a way that's elegant and graceful. So I can imagine that I could enjoy an elegant and graceful change process. You know, that could feel good. Life would feel good if that's what change felt like. And there are ways that we can change our mind that feel more graceful rather than like painful surgery. Yeah,
they're definitely two of my favourite words, elegant and graceful. And I know when lots of people think about change, there is this overwhelming response at times, just thinking like the change is going to be anything but elegant and graceful. And I was just wondering the whole concept of an agile mind and how it does have the ability to adapt and to like sort of move into new terrains. And I'm just wondering what's actually at the other end of the spectrum. And just in terms of human resistance to change, what kind of mind what kind of challenges more specifically come up for people who are challenged by it?
Well, the opposite of the agile mind is one that's a very fixed mind, a mind that doesn't change easily or gracefully, and one that you know potentially gets quite jammed up and stuck in times of change. When other things are moving gracefully or around you, you can't join the dance. And for me, you know, the connection I'd like to make here is with fear, because you know, stress and fear are what shifts us from an agile mind, which is our natural state. If you think of children, they have agile minds. You know, they naturally change and grow gracefully. It's not a painful process for them. They don't resist it. In fact, you know, they throw themselves into it. And so, you know, what happens is that stress and fear causes physiological changes in our mind and our body, and that change causes us, you know, to think differently. And some of that thinking is that we become more rigid in the way that we think, more blinkered in the way that we think. You know, so it's the distinction is kind of almost throughout when we're in a place of fear, when we're in a fear state and the stress response, then we develop this agile mind and this stiff way of moving through life, and that's when we're more likely to get stuck. On the other hand, the agile mind is, I'd want to link it to love, because love for me is the idea of expressing yourself and making your contribution in spite of potential threats. So, you know, it's not about being mushy-brained and going out there all naive and thinking that, you know, everything is going to be rosy and smile and the world smiles back at you. But a loving space is when, you know, we realize that that's the way life is. Sometimes things happen that hurt. Sometimes there are risks. But I'm going to open myself and extend my contribution into the world anyway. And when we're in that space, we're much more agile because the mind is open. And so we see so many more possibilities. We think in a much more flexible way. And we're much more able to be creative and generate more options for ourselves.
I absolutely love the parallels you've just drawn there, Kath, between an open mind and an open heart and how they seem to correlate. it seems quite fascinating, actually, and probably something that not a lot of people will have actually thought about. Excellent. Now, I guess like this whole process of being aware of the concept of an agile mind and being adaptable to change with a sense of elegance and grace, I was just wondering how you actually became interested in the field of helping people adapt to change.
Yeah. You know, I think it's come, yeah, my passion for agile living strategies, and I think, you know, also the reason why I took it into creating the Zen Productivity program that I've released recently it's really come out of my own experience of and my work journey and the kind of environments that and particular roles that I found myself in. Because, you know, as I said, it's a lot about stress and fear, and being able to step into an agile mind in spite of lots of fear and stress triggers around you, And I had the opportunity to experience many stress triggers for myself and witness it in other people, because the types of work that I have engaged in the past have been very high stress and fear environments. So, you know, to give you an idea of the kind of environments that I worked in, I started out my working life as a social worker. And in Cape Town, I was actually based in an area in Cape Town called the Cape Flats, which is a notorious area for its high levels of gang-related violence and domestic violence and substance abuse. And, I mean, it's basically a continuous low-grade war zone. And I was doing trauma debriefing counseling at the time in school. So I was working mostly with children who had witnessed violence and who had experienced horrendous abuse in their own homes. And I remember how scared I was just going into the area, you know, fearing for my own life. And never mind hearing about, you know, the actual experiences from my clients. And, of course, a big part of trauma debriefing is bearing witness to someone's story and, you know, being able to hold that space without freaking out yourself. And, you know, I remember how for those first few months my mind would cloud up and I just couldn't think. You know, I'd come home with complete fluff in my head. And, I mean, those of you listening on the call know what that feels like when you kind of, you're sitting in a space and you're needing to respond and you're thinking, huh, I got nothing. That's it. I got nothing. And the irony was that I was working with children who had been sent to me by their teachers because it was hoped that the trauma debriefing counseling would help them to think better, because they actually had learning delays. They couldn't sit still. They couldn't be in a classroom environment and think and take in information, because the stress response had so blinkered their minds. And so I was supposed to help them, but I couldn't even think clearly myself.
It's amazing.
And you know, I was really passionate. I really wanted to help them. And so I had to quickly learn how to manage my own stress and fear so that I could be helpful to them. And, you know, then I spent a few years after that in child protection. And, of course, this is another, you know, high fear, high stress environment. And I remember in my first child protection job, I was so stressed that I couldn't keep my food down, and I lost 7 kilos in the first 2 months.
Wow.
It was absolutely horrendous. And again, I was given, you know, many challenges and opportunities to learn how to be in a stressful and fearful situation, but still think straight and use my mental and intuitive resources. You know, for example, when going to visit a family home for the first time to investigate a new abuse allegation. And, you know, I needed to be fully aware. I couldn't be stuck in my own head and fear. And, you know, with interviewing aggressive parents, I learned a lot of new swear words during those few years doing child protection. You know, and having been able to keep my mind clear and calm so that I could explain to children who were in a place of fear, you know, why are we moving you? Again, you know, after you've become very attached to your foster parents now, and responding to teenage clients who phone in saying that they're going to take their life, you know, and it's five to five. And keeping a calm, clear mind to deal with that and respond in a way that's going to be helpful for them. And then, you know, of course, keeping a level head while I'm being grilled in court that I could represent a care plan, you know, that would be the best care plan for those children. You know, particularly when, you know, the barristers are doing everything that they can to discredit you so that they can argue their side of the case. And, you know, I think it was because I had to learn how to, I guess it was because I did learn how to develop a calm mind and in those very pressurized, high-stress environments, that I realized the importance of it, you know, and I was able to get really good results instead of being a social worker who burnt out or who made dodgy decisions. In my first year of child protection, I was given senior social worker cases based in the High Court, and you know, it's only complex cases that go to the High Court, and it's very unusual for someone so early in their career to get those kind of cases. And you know, for me, one of my ways of measuring success in that field was how many cases actually got contested in court, because if you have a well-thought-out plan, the lawyers will suggest to their clients that they shouldn't contest. And, you know, lawyers get paid for their time in court, so they're only going to say that if it's a really well-thought-out plan. So, you know, so for me, you know, that and the fact that I was able to help so many children return to home because I could help their parents think more clearly, it helped me to see how important it was and really experience the benefits of having a clear mind chaotic and stressful situations. And you might think these are quite extreme situations, but you know, in some ways, studying the extreme gives you insight into patterns, you know, that underlie, you know, the less extreme situations. Mm. You can see those patterns more clearly. And you know, after working in child protection, I moved into working with corporates, and I was working mostly with call center employees in Cape Town, and I saw that stress and fear is a business problem. you know, it's not something that just happens in the non-profit sector or with people who are having a major trauma in their life. You know, I think stress and fear is possibly one of the things that has the greatest negative impact on thinking and performance results in a work environment.
Definitely.
So, you know, I think some workplaces are more stressful than others, and you know, call center environments are particularly fast-paced, high-change, results-orientated environments. You know, more and more companies are going that way now, and you know, for leaner structures and you know, and placing pressure on people to produce results if they want to keep their job. You know, and more recently, I'm working with coaching people privately, and they're mostly people who are professionals working in kind of process-oriented environments or techy kind of environments, and having their own business. And you know, again, stress and fear crops up, and it's something that it's always stress and fear that jams thinking. And so, a lot of the kind of work that I do is about helping people unjam their thinking and think more creatively so that they can get better results. And so, yeah, that's
great.
The story for what I'm so
it's really, really powerful. It just provides like an incredible context for your work, just to, I guess, to be, like you mentioned it before, the challenges of actually being in really difficult situations actually also provided you with the opportunity to see stress and the jamming of the mind in very, very distinct, very challenging environments, from child protection to counselling to then actually taking those skills into a corporate environment that was equally as challenging. It really does provide a really intriguing and interesting view of how stress affects us as human beings to live confidently and freely. Now, Kath, in the call promo, we mentioned the four core agile living strategies, and I was just wondering if you could take a few moments actually to share with people what those four strategies actually are.
Yeah. you know, so if we're dealing with high change and a lot of information and more factors that we can't control, then, you know, there's these four life skills or agile living strategies that I think really can make all the difference in between, you know, whether you are just getting by, coping, or whether you're actually able to thrive. So, you know, the first is being able to keep a calm and clear and resourceful mind amidst chaos, change, anxiety, uncertainty going on around you. And for me, this is the most important strategy, and, you know, I'll be sharing a lot more about that on this call. And again, that's the focus of Zen Productivity, is helping people to calm and clear their mind so that they can think creatively, get stuff done, move the projects on, and so on. The second is having the ability to do change well. I think most of us have a natural resistance to change. I think we kind of have some built-in physiological resistance to change. You know, I think it's because we like what's familiar, and that makes sense because familiar is safe and it's easier, and we can do familiar in autopilot. So we don't have to think consciously and carefully when we're doing familiar. We can just run with it. What's unfamiliar is hard work and potentially risky. And, you know, so we have this natural resistance to change. And I think part of that as well is that change can introduce a lot of uncertainty into our lives. But one of the things that is, I guess, useful about change is that there's a particular set of stages that we go through when we're experiencing change. And those are pretty universal, whether it's organizational change or whether it's personal change. You know, the particular stages that we go through. And so for people who can learn how to do those stages of change, how to negotiate each stage, you know, each stage has a particular set of skills that really can help you to thrive and get through that stage. It's those people who are going to be able to create some sense of feeling in control in their lives amidst all the change. And maybe more importantly, it's those people who are going to effectively be able to lead other people through change. You know, and leadership is just such a core success strategy. Being able to gather people around a particular vision and take people there through the change, you know. So one and two are keeping a calm, clear and resourceful mind and being able to do change well. And then a third strategy that's really important is being able to use your whole mind. And you know, if you're interested to find out more about this, there's a fantastic book by Dan Pink called A Whole New Mind. And really, he talks a lot about the reason why we're shifting into a world that requires us to use our whole mind. We've been living in a very left brain focused world where people are rewarded for thinking in that way. And the left brain thinking it's about analyzing a whole into its parts, so kind of separating things, categorizing, labeling, thinking logically, thinking literally, and thinking in terms of processes and a series of procedures. And it's quite a linear way of thinking. If you think about that, those are the kind of, you know, it's math, science, reading, it's lawyers, engineers, programmers, and in our school environments for, you know, the last while, that's been the focus. You know, if you wanted to do home economics or art, you'd be laughed at, you know, and thought of as, you know, well, that's the lower class kind of thing. People who are good at maths and science, those are the ones where they're going to be successful, and those are the ones we're going to reward. But this is changing.
Definitely the challenge I experienced in the school environment as well. Being naturally very right hemispheric, and then being conditioned to really think in that logical, linear left brain kind of way didn't really feel very natural for me. And we see a lot of that in I guess the repetitive based jobs where people are required to work and not really think very much. But I guess in times of great change, like, you must see that in this kind of environment, the more creative and flexible mind is coming more to the forefront.
It is, it is. And some of that is because we're with the vast majority of choices that we now have in the market, the information about all the different options for products and services, you know, that we're much more picky as customers, you know, so we don't want something that just functions well, we want it to be pretty too. So companies are having to take their products and kind of you know, re-engineer them and make them beautiful for us, not just functional. So they're having to employ people who can think in that way. So designers are becoming more more valued, I guess. There's the other side of it also that's kind of, that's the pull side, there's a push side as well, in that what's happening is with technological advancements, we're handing more and more of the left brain tasks over to computers, because you can get a computer to do the left brain tasks. The right brain stuff is much more difficult to hand over to computers. And not just computers, you know, the whole outsourcing culture as well. A lot of the left brain stuff, you know, it's easier to break it down into procedures that can then be easily managed and monitored, and so we can more easily outsource that to places where it can be done more cheaply, you know, in developing countries like India and South Africa. I mean, the call center industry is booming in South Africa. So, you know, I think it's actually Dawson who says that 90% of world's engineers are expected to live in Asia by 2011.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. That's amazing, yeah.
Phenomenal. So developing countries are training, you know, engineers, IT professionals, and lawyers, and more of that stuff is being outsourced to places where it can be done more cheaply. If you've got the ability to, you know, if you've only ever developed the left brain stuff, it's a competitive world. It's becoming increasingly competitive for you. And if you have the ability to do the whole mind stuff, then sure, you make yourself incredibly valuable, because you can straddle the left brain world and the right brain world. And you know, maybe I should say what the right brain thinking style is. It's really it's about empathy and relationship skills. You know, right brain thinking is about seeing a big picture and seeing the relationships between the parts in a system. And it's also about being able to appreciate aesthetic beauty and thinking creatively, so synthesizing or bringing together ideas that weren't together before. And thinking in pictures and metaphors and stories, and interpreting emotion. So, you know, it's almost this, the left brain thinking is typically masculine. And
yeah.
So right brain thinking has been stereotyped as feminine kind of thinking. You know, Dan Pink actually makes the distinction where he says the world, the people who are going to thrive are those who can be androgynous in their you know, where they can.
That's a great, really do great that. Thought.
And you know, I think particularly the relationship skills, you know, in tough times, probably the biggest resilience factor, and again, I saw this highlighted in a social work kind of domain, but, you know, we all feel it, that in tough times, it's your social support that makes all the difference in how resilient you are. So, you know, being able to do relationships and empathy is just such a crucial part of thriving in this age. And business, you know, with so many options on the market, you know, we're going to do business with people that we like and trust. You know, because otherwise, there's just how else do we choose? It's just so much to choose from. So I'd rather just quickly make the decision based on who do I know. So, you know, relationships are going to be, I think they really are, but incredibly key to business success. And, you know, the right brain thinking is the route to calming yourself when distressed and to accessing your intuition. And there's an awesome video by a talk that Jill Balty-Taylor, who's a neuroscientist who had a stroke, and she was aware of the stroke experience and documented it. And then
I saw that video. It's very powerful.
You've seen it?
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. It's, yeah, one of the TED Talks.
Yeah, one of the TED Talks. It's a phenomenal speech.
It's phenomenal. And she talks about, you know, the importance of shifting into, you know, right brain, being able to move between right and left brain.
I've actually heard that in the world that we're living in today. It's almost like all these pieces of information, it's almost like the logical left brain for a lot of people is actually shutting down because there's just so much information. Even just choosing something as simple as a mobile phone contract, like there's so much layers of complexity, and I don't know, I just whenever I look at that sort of thing, my mind just flips over. And I heard lots of commentators actually say that, like, the world's getting so complex that literally, like, a lot of these left brain faculties aren't really going to be useful to people, and like a lot of people's minds on that hemisphere is actually going to shut down, and really all they're going to be able to use to navigate the world is their intuition and some of these more, like, I love what you said there before with like and trust, like these softer relationship driven decision making processes.
We've got to do much more of the gap field decision making now. There's just too much going on. So that third strategy was about using your whole mind, and then the fourth strategy that I see as being really important is being able to identify and dissolve limiting assumptions. And in some ways, this is what having an agile mind is really all about. It's finding the story that you're telling yourself that's jamming up your thinking and giving you stress and sort of cutting you off from seeing options, and being able to question that and see alternative perspectives, and replace it with more empowering assumptions. But I think there's a really popular book, 4-Hour Work Week, Tim Ferriss. And, you know, a lot of people know this book now, and the real gem behind this book is just the way that he challenges assumptions about how we should work and, you know, why we should work.
Yeah. The book is an absolute work of genius. I love it.
And there are more and more people like that who, I mean, he's young and, you know, he's launched himself into the world with, you know, incredible success. And I think a lot of that success has come out of the fact that he just challenges assumptions left, right, and center. You know, and the great thing about a high-change world and high-change work environments is that it's much easier to break the rules in those kind of environments. You know, because people are so busy they often don't notice, or just because the whole thing is moving. Rather than kind of a static environment, quite hard to break rules in a static state. So,
I think for me that's where the real excitement is, in this being able to break the rules, and I guess the change environment, I guess where the fear pops up, but then there's also you get the reward of actually being able to break the rules and do your own thing and start creating the things that you want to create in a much more fluid and effortless way, because the energy is moving in that direction, as opposed to being in an environment where there's not really a whole lot of change going down, and being in that space can be very, very frustrating for people who want to grow and develop and do new things.
Yeah, yeah. again, it's about whether you have that ability to feel comfortable with change. And if you do, then there's immense opportunity.
Awesome. Well, those four strategies are very, very powerful. Certainly the last strategy, resolve limiting assumptions, is definitely one of my personal favourites. I just love the whole notion of taking thought patterns and, like, if they're not serving people or myself, just to pull them apart and put them back together in a much more exciting and interesting way. Now, Kath, I mentioned early on that we had a whole series of different questions that came in from people from all over the world. And I'm just going to ask a question first off from Bruce, who is in Australia. And Bruce actually asks, what are the best methods for creating the desired states of enthusiasm, mental clarity, and deep focus?
This is where we want to be all the time, isn't it? Because if we're in the zone, then that's when our performance just peaks and it feels good and it's awesome. I think a lot of the time we want quick instant gratification tips for increasing our motivation if we're kind of getting into that zone when it's lagging. The first thing I'd say is to kind of be cautious of that, because it's a bit like going to the doctor just when you're sick and not taking care of your health the rest of the time. If you get into the habit of developing particular lifestyle habits, and I talk about 8 different lifestyle practices in Zen Productivity that create a kind of context where it's easy for you to have an agile mind and you kind of stay in the habit. Some examples are things like eating healthily and regular exercise. Research is now showing that exercise improves your thinking. So some of those lifestyle habits are things that we underestimate. We often don't pay attention to that, and we kind of try to burn the candle at both ends and expect that we can be in the zone all the time. So if we're taking care of those lifestyle habits, I guess, then we're creating overall capacity and resilience in ourselves. The next thing that I would think would be important to check with wanting to stay in the zone all the time is, are you doing what you love? Because when you're doing what you love, you naturally slip into the zone. One of the best ways to figure out what you love is to ask yourself, well, what those times when I lose track of time, what was I doing? Because, we naturally just slip into that zone where we detach from other stuff and we're so absorbed in doing what we're doing because we love it. So, Bruce, I would check out, are you doing what you love? Why are you doing what you're doing? Is it authentic love, or are you kind of trying to fit into someone else's expectations? And when we're doing what we love, yes, there are occasions when we could get out of the flow, and that's always worry and fear that's pulling us out of the flow. So I guess then with worry and fear, it's about being specific about what is it that you're worried about, what is it that you're fearing, because generalized anxiety that kind of runs around in the back of our heads all the time can be incredibly paralyzing and pull us out of resourcefulness. And you can't do anything about generalized anxiety because you haven't actually targeted any specific obstacles. And so it's only once you get specific about what it is you're worrying about that you can actually make a plan for addressing those worries.
That's really powerful. I love the concept of just paying attention to the things you're doing when you absolutely lose track of time, and just that real childlike presence to whatever's in front of you, that everything else just falls into the background. I think that's a really beautiful question to ask. Now I have a question from Liz in the UK, and Liz asks, "Hello Kath, 10 years ago I lived in the Channel Islands and lived a pretty idyllic life. I meditated 2 hours a day, walked on the beach and ran my naturopathic practice from home. My mind was calm, clear and resourceful. I returned to England 10 years ago and now find myself working very hard trying to keep a calm, clear and resourceful mind. This is not the same. I'm hoping that you'll bring some answers to achieving a state of consciousness I miss." So how could Liz actually regain that serene, calm mind that she had when she was in the Channel Islands back in the UK?
Yeah, that does sound idyllic. you know, and I think a lot of us have this idea in our heads about how when we retire or, you know, some holiday we'll go on and we'll go to some idyllic place and that's going to help us clear our minds or that's going to make us feel happy. And, you know, it's easy to think of your circumstances as being, you know, the your circumstances are creating the way you're feeling and the way you're thinking. You know, but actually it's not our circumstances that create our state of mind. That state of mind is something that we have complete control over ourselves. And I mean, that's why someone like Mandela was able to spend 27 years in jail, you know, and come out with a loving and clear mind and be the awesome leader that he has been, instead of coming out, you know, angry and vengeful and stuck. You know, I think that's a real example of, I mean, his circumstances were horrendous, and he wasn't able to control or change things about his circumstances, but he controlled and changed what he could change, which was his mind. And so, Liz, I would say, you know, and I'm kind of, from you saying, I'm trying to do it, guessing that you're not managing to do some of, to bring in some of the lifestyle practices, like you mentioned, walking and meditating, that you're not bringing that into your life here in the UK. And so maybe a useful question for you might be to ask yourself, what am I assuming that prevents me from feeling the way I want to feel in the UK? What am I assuming that prevents me from feeling the way I want to feel in the UK? And maybe also, you know, what am I assuming that prevents me from doing those practices like walking and meditating and so on that I know are highly effective ways of creating a calm and clear mind? What are you assuming that prevents you from doing those here in the UK?
Yeah, very, very, very powerful questions to ask. Awesome. Now, Kath, I think we've got time for one more question. And this question has actually come from Juliet, who is also in the UK. And Juliet asks, can you actually do this alone, or do you need a mentor to keep you sane?
I like that, to keep you sane. sometimes your mentors can be the ones that you...
turn you insane.
you know, of course you can do it alone because you have complete control of your mind. And, you know, these days through the internet, you have access to information. You can do just about anything. You know, and I've made Zen Productivity available as a do-it-yourself coaching program for that very reason, because I know that some people don't have time to pitch up for teleseminar, or, you know, they may just be in the space that they want to do some focused work by themselves. But having said that, you know, it can be really fun and accelerate your learning. if you get together with other like-minded people. And I think it goes back again to the idea that social support is one of the biggest resilience factors. And you know, if you're doing it by yourself, it's very easy to, I guess particularly if you get stuck with it, to get despondent, and it's very easy to feel like you're alone in the world, kind of on your mission, and nobody understands. And, you know, that's a recipe for demotivation. So I do encourage people to find like-minded, you know, make up your own tribe. find people who think the way that you think and are excited about the stuff you're excited about, and you know, and people who want to create a calm and clear mind, just like you do. And you know, that can be paid professionals, or it can just be like-minded people around you that you pull together, and you rub off on each other, and motivate each other.
I think that's a really powerful point. I think like change can actually be very isolating for people, and actually coming together with people that have a similar heart set and a similar mindset can be really reassuring. And I guess one of the interesting things I've noticed from running all these different people you should meet calls is that us as human beings, we actually have the same human concerns. We all share the same hopes, the same fears. There's not a whole lot that really separates us in terms of our humanness. And often when we're in times of great difficulty, and like it can actually feel very isolating, whatever the challenge is. And I guess that's one of the real ideas behind people you should meet as well. It's almost like an offering or a way to reach out and connect with people all around the world who actually are coming from a similar space and want to improve and want to be the best they can be and want to actually create a meaningful world for us all to share and to benefit from. But, yeah, there's always resources for actually reaching out and connecting with people. I thought that was
a great resource because, you know, I found you when I was in Cape Town.
Yeah.
And it's one of the benefits of this high-change, high-technology world that if you can't find tribe members you think like in your near vicinity, it's really easy and getting easier all the time to find them on the internet and to connect with them in a way that, you know, that when you actually do meet them face, you feel like you've known them forever.
Yeah. This is certainly
accelerate relationships.
Yeah. I guess, like, in traditionally, like we're still very much tribal animals, and I guess like traditionally we were basically bound by geography in terms of our tribes, and if you didn't like your neighbour or if you didn't like your fellow tribes people, you're pretty much stuck for the rest of your life. But I guess the beautiful thing about this this flat world that we find ourselves in is that if the tribe that you're currently in doesn't work for you, there's certainly people with similar mindset. And similar orientation for you, if you just take the time to look and just say to people what you're looking for and reach out and make those connections.
Mm.
Awesome. Well, Kath, we've covered a whole wealth of information this evening. I really wanted to actually say thank you very, very much for sharing your great depth of knowledge, and also the thing that really stands out for me as well is your unique life experience. You've actually gone and worked in many different stressful contexts, and I think that really gives you a very unique qualification to offer real value for people in this whole domain of actually adapting to change and working through and dealing with stress. And I know that there are many people on this call who will have really resonated with your message and your approach and also your life experience. And I was just wondering if you could actually share with people how they can actually find out more about the work that you do. And also I'm very, very keen to find out more about your Zen productivity course, which I know is commencing soon. So just wondering if you could actually share a little bit more about what you do.
Thank you. Well, my website is mineyourresources.com, MINEYOUR, resources.com. And then, yeah, so you can go check out the site. There's a lot of wonderful free resources that you can use, you know, looking at the blog. And then some free calls that you can subscribe for and previous calls that you can download. And then Zen Productivity. It feels like a lot of the different tools and processes that I've been using with people, I've been able to draw together in a program. And you know, I think a lot of what we've spoken about has been the motivation for creating this program. You know, that it's about helping people to have a calm, clear, and resourceful mind, so that they can respond to high change, to demands, to opportunities, and be proactive and creative and productive on projects that are really important to them, even if there's chaos and anxiety around them. And even if, you know, the news has got big stories about the recession and all sorts of horror. And so, you know, I think this course is created with a particular person in mind. I think it's someone who is a professional and lives and works in a high-change, fast-paced environment, as I've said, and would like to get better at keeping a calm and clear mind so that they can be more effective in their job. So particularly if you're in a job that requires you to do a lot of thinking, and, you know, particularly if you're in a job where you're basically making decisions on a daily basis, you know, that's your work, and you need to be able to think clearly and make quality decisions. And then also it would be great for someone who is in a creative career who finds that sometimes they get stressed with deadlines and that paralyzes their thinking and maybe causes them to kind of run out of ideas. And they'd like to find what I call the sweet spot. You know, there's this place where a little bit of stress, but not too much, really ups our performance and creativity. And so, you know, that's definitely something that we'll look at in the program, is how to find that sweet spot where you increase your performance and your creativity. And then it's also really great for people who want to learn how to calm their mind and detach from work worries when they're at home, or vice versa, because they're finding that, you know, carrying work worries around with them is having an impact on home life and so on.
That's certainly, remember when I was actually working in the corporate world, the the levels of stress and challenge did actually overlap into my home life, and I really preferred that it didn't. So I think it's a really, really powerful thing for people who are in that situation where one part of your life is actually interfering with all the other different parts. And I guess we're all these holistic beings, so it's almost impossible for a stressful context to, in one aspect of our life, not to flow off and affect all the different other areas of life. So, and often just changing one particular area can actually have a flow-on effect as well on the upside for all those different areas as well.
Definitely. And that's also why I ask people to look at an overall lifestyle approach in the program. So it's not just about having some, you know, here are some nifty NLP tools that you can use, you know, in the moment, or, you know, to do some mental gymnastics. It's about looking at an overall strategy for creating long-term resilience and quality thinking. So we look at all life areas.
Great. And just for people at home, Kath, when does it actually start? How much does it cost? How can they get involved with the program?
Great, yeah. The tele-seminar starts on the 30th of April with weekly sessions. It's a seven-week tele-seminar series. And what I've done, especially for the call this evening, is I've actually extended the early bird offer so that it's still available to people until the end of day on Friday, the 17th, tomorrow. So if you're interested, then go there now and check it out. it's so the normal price is £247, and the early bird offer is £197. So you can really save if you jump on board now, and then it's also available as three payments of £77 if you'd prefer to break it up into three payments. Then that's fine as well. And then also, just yesterday, I have arranged with a good friend of mine, Jovan Dangeli, he's a master hypnosis trainer, and he has a fantastic guided self-hypnosis audio called Cool, Calm, and Collected. And we're making that available as a bonus giveaway to the first group of 12 participants. So this first tele-seminar group is going to kick off on the 30th of April. They're going to get that as an additional bonus. And I'm also throwing in a voucher for 50% discount on one-to-one resource mining sessions with me, which you can use within 3 months of having signed up for the tele-seminar.
Great.
So that would be nice for people who feel that they'd like to take a little step deeper, or they'd like to work on a very specific focused area, and it's easy to do that within the one-to-one context with me, in addition to the tele-seminar that we'll be working through.
Cool. Great. That's what a fabulous resource for people. And again, I guess the really exciting thing about tele-seminars is that people can participate in the program from anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Bring the tribe together, it doesn't matter.
That's the spirit, that's what I'd like to hear. Great. Well, thanks very much for...
Have you got a link on your site for...
There is actually for people like that are tuned in... on the live call, just on the actual webcast page, there is a link down the bottom of the page that takes people directly to the actual the Zen Productivity Teleseminar Coaching booking page. But we'll also, for people who are listening to this in the recording, I'll also make that the link for people available in the recordings page as well. So just look below the recording and you'll see a link there as well.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Damien.
Awesome. Great, Kath. So, once again, I just really wanted to say thank you. Like, the whole area is a real area of fascination for me, and I know it's going to be an area that continues to grow, and lots more people are going to be interested in actually how to really get the most out of their minds in these ever-changing exponential growth period that we're moving through. And I was just wondering, Kath, if you could actually pull the whole call together and leave some final words of advice for anyone looking to create a new mind.
I guess it all boils down to the idea that the quality of your thinking is what creates the quality of your results. And with all of this change, we want to be able to be mentally agile, and fear and stress gets in the way and causes you to jam your mind and get that rigid thinking that gets you stuck. So it's really all about being able to take yourself to a place where you can think calmly and clearly, so that you can then have an agile mind where you can identify and change the assumptions that you've been making, and you can create new possibilities and new perspectives for yourself, and new options.
Great.
So it's all about having that mental agility.
Mm. Great. Well, I'm certainly going to be practicing my mental agility on the inspiration of this call, Kath. So thank you very much for me personally, and also thank you very much on behalf of everyone who's had the chance to participate and listen to this call this evening, and also for people who will also be listening into this as a recording on the People You Should Meet recordings page. Great. So thanks once again, Kath.
Thank you so much. I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting.
Yeah, it's been great.
About this all night.
Yeah, just wanted to to say thank you for reaching out and actually making contact from South Africa, and it's been great for our friendship to grow since you've actually moved over here to the UK. So it's really good to have you in my life, and thanks again for sharing your wealth of experience.
And thank you. You know that you've been a fantastic resource for me now that I'm pursuing the location-independent life. It's wonderful to know that I have someone I can call on who can help me with a bunch of the technical stuff. So I'm really taking my business to that next level, as an online business. So thank you.
Awesome.
I made a good move in following my intuition and finding you through people you should meet. So thank you.
That's good. Your right hemispheric brain faculties are working well. Cool. Awesome. Thanks, Cass, and thank you everyone at home, and we look forward to having you on PeopleYouShouldMeet.com call very, very soon. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.